Hello, legends. Today, we have a very special episode. It's our 200th episode and marks 4 years of podcast production with Catching Up with Cub. And for it, we have a very special guest, my friend, mentor, investor, business partner, and Australian business icon, Mark Boris. We had one of the most fascinating, insightful conversations we've ever had together. Mark shared a day in the life of Mark Boris, including his daily habits and how he manages stress and time. We talk about his podcast and everything he's learned in doing it, why he does it, and what traits all successful entrepreneurs have in common. He shared his expectations with the Australian economy over the next 12 months and how we as business owners can be preparing, and the positives and negatives in his life caused by complete dedication to his business and career. Mark is truly passionate about supporting small business and Australian business, and I'm so lucky to have him in my life. He's literally one of the best people I've ever met, and I owe him so much. He's always supported me. So, ladies and gentlemen, Mark Boris. Our 200th episode.
Cool.
Yeah, that is cool. This is crazy. It's 200 episodes and 4 years.
Wow.
Making podcasts.
So 50 episodes sort of on average a year.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Which kind of makes sense.
But that's a lot though.
Holidays.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Well, you do. How many do you do? How many?
In a month I do 8, and then I do another 4, 12, probably 12 or 13. Per month.
Yeah, you're doing a lot more than we do. So how do you balance that though? Because like even doing this podcast takes a lot of my time. And today, all I have done for work is interview people, because we're doing this now. And just before this, I was interviewing the CTO of Microsoft about AI for the Boa community.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, so like it takes a lot of time to do this stuff. How do you manage that?
I bang them out. I probably do I'm pretty strict on my timing, so I do an hour and a quarter per episode. So because I got to do the intros and stuff like that. Is this being recorded?
Yeah, we're live.
Okay, we're live.
Sorry,
okay. Hey guys. I know. I just want to make sure I don't say anything that's.
At least they know we talking naturally.
Yeah, totally. Well, first and foremost, 200 episodes is unreal. So well done, mate. Well done. So the way I do it is, but I've got a big team, as you know. We've been doing it for nearly 9 years now. And we've got the cadence down quite religiously. Like it's actually
it's a system.
It's been systemized. So some days I might do 6 podcasts. So I might start at 9 and finish at 8 or 9 that night. And then that frees up a bit of time for me. Then the dudes in the office and they go madly around editing stuff, and that takes, as you know, a long time. I don't see the edits. I don't get involved in the edits. I don't get involved in the interviews. So you do pre-discussions and all that sort of stuff. You look as though you source a lot of your own talent.
We use all the Cub members.
But you actually call them and talk to them and, you know, bring them along and stuff like that. Like, I mean, I know Laura and Thomas probably do a lot of the stuff, but you're more involved than I am.
Mm-hmm.
My team, sort of, they tell me who it is, because we get people jamming us all the time. Can we do this? Can we do this? Can we do this? I'm at that luxurious position now. Like I had Robert Kiyosaki yesterday.
Wow, that's a big one.
That was
the first book my dad ever gave me, Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Well, he came and talked about his book and his board game called Cashflow. It's called the Cashflow Board Game. And he gave me the history of the whole thing. So I get a lot of publishers trying to push through people that they're trying to publicize at any particular moment. We had Dave Warner the other day. So they come into my team. My team just sort of fits them up and sits them in. So I'm sort of a bit lucky at the moment.
But it's still time consuming.
Wasn't always like that though.
Yeah, the thing is though, it is still very time consuming. So like why do you do it? What's the purpose of your whole – because you've at this point you've just got a big media company and media presence – What's the purpose of it for you? Why do you do it?
Me personally?
Yeah, you personally.
I like meeting people and I'm not very social. In fact, I'm the opposite to social, so whatever that is. But I also recognise in a health sense that you need to have social interaction with male, females, all sorts of people. So I think to myself, I thought to myself many years ago, how do I do that? Because I know as part of the health regime a person has, apart from food, sleep, exercise, all that usual stuff, you've got to have a community, you've got to talk to people, and you've got to have interest in what people are saying. So I'm not naturally good at that. So I thought to myself, a podcast where I could do that. I could meet interesting people, maybe earn a dollar at it if I'm successful at it, which took me like 5 or 6 years to become successful at it. But also it sort of forces me into a pattern whereby I sit down and I'll talk to somebody and I find, then I'm started to find out interesting things about people, and then it makes me create conversation. And I'm socializing. There's no booze. I'm not eating a whole lot of shit food. And I'm creating an audience at the same time. The audience is really cool. So, yeah, that's sort of how I started, Dan.
That's so interesting, though, because that's literally what this podcast has become for me. Because you're right. It's become, well, I'm not able to network with the Cub community as much as I once was and meet all the new members. So this has become my way of actually making friends,
totally.
Meeting people. And because you're on a podcast, especially when you have a big brand like your own, then you're meeting really interesting people very regularly, some of which become your friends and others that you're just really grateful to meet and to learn from.
Well, sometimes you can do a collab with them too. Like you can do a collaboration. You might be sort of sitting there, which you would have thought about prior to doing the show. And then like recently I had Nick Plumber from Messina, the ice cream company. And I haven't seen him for years, because last time I saw him was I gave him an award at the GQ Awards for most innovative business or something like that many, many years ago. We both hate since then. But when I was talking to him, we started hitting it off pretty well, and I started thinking about what about a collab with him, and maybe, you know, we're working on a protein shake, like a proper protein shake, like a good quality protein shake for people over 50, really not for your age group, but it's, you know, for older dudes.
For yours.
Yeah, definitely over 50. For older dudes, but, you know, make sure we've got the stuff in there that we're probably not getting out of our diet or we need to get because our body doesn't produce it as much anymore. And then I thought, but most of the stuff tastes like crap. And then I talked to Nick. Maybe he and I could get into one of his labs, because he's got these crazy cool labs where they play around with food tastes. And I thought, what about if we do a Messina, you know, my thing's called Project 100, but a Messina Project 100 collaboration about tastes. And that come off the back of doing a podcast. So I'm not saying I leveraged him, but like it's sort of an opportunity.
But it's almost your way of networking.
Yeah, it is.
Like that's what it's become, because that is just networking. You meet people, you like them, you've got collaboration, partnerships, you might work together on things like that. That's really what it sounds like it's become.
Yeah, it's fun.
And it's fun. And tell me, so you've interviewed a whole lot of people now. What have you learned from interviewing them? What is the common trait that you find that most successful people have in common?
They're curious. Curiosity. So I reckon one of the most and as probably it's taken me many, many years to work this out, but it's probably one of my traits too. I'm just curious about stuff and markets. Like how does stuff, content it could be or it could be a product, fit within a marketplace, and what is that how is that marketplace arising? And it could be a brand new marketplace. It could be something to do with it that comes off the back of digital or internet, you know, the newer marketplaces. But I've also learned that those newer marketplaces are not new. They're just a newer format. These marketplaces have always existed. So curiosity is a common denominator amongst all those people I've interviewed who are either successful in terms of making money or successful in terms of building a business or just successful in terms of reach and being interesting to a crowd or an audience. So curiosity is one of those things that they all possess now, and then they possess curiosity within their category. So property developers, it could be engineering, could be science, could be medicine, they could be a doctor, but over and above their doctoring stuff they do day to day, they could be curious about maybe extending people's lives or maybe making people's lives a bit better.
And how are you perceiving curiosity? So how, like, what are they doing that's making you realize, or that's making you realize that, okay, this person's curious? Or in other words, it could be this person's thinking about why things work the way they do and if there's a way to make it work better.
Well, you're a good example. You're a perfect example.
I mean, how is that?
Well,
I'm pretty curious.
But no, 100%. And it doesn't mean you have knowledge about Boa, like Boa being your, you know, the new business.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean you know how it's going to work. So I said that's the first trait. But curiosity is something that Daniel Hakim, he's got. And you're exercising it all the time. Here you are doing podcasts and asking me. You're curious about me and or your other guests. So curiosity is a really important part. And curiosity into how market, it's not just, oh, I'm just curious, but it's curiosity into how this thing works within the vertical. So it's not just the top bit, it's curiosity all the way, all the layers. Then the next thing is putting stuff in action. You've got to put something into action, and that requires energy. So all the individuals all the individuals that I interview who are successful have a lot of energy. Energy is a big part of this. So curiosity and energy are probably the two key non-negotiables in terms of being successful, I think, in anything, not just business. Even in a relationship, you have to be curious about what is it that my partner and or my kids, whatever, whoever the relationship is with, what is it that they like, they don't like? What can I do with them that, you know, we're both equals on and that will drive that relationship into a deeper place? Then you've got to have energy to do it. You can't just say, oh, fuck it up, I'm not going to do anything about this, I couldn't be bothered. That's no good. So energy is a really critical thing. And I mean, I don't know anybody who's got more energy than you. And I've said this before, I'm not here blowing smoke up your butt either, by the way, but Danny like him is the most energetic bloke I know. And you need energetic. You need it. And I'm pretty energy for a senior person, let's call it. And my big game is my big curiosity game is, how can I keep that energy? I'm curious. What does it take to take the energy I have now beyond my 70th birthday, which is 2 years? Now, you know people who are 70 or over, and some of those people sort of pull back. They tend to pull back and they don't retire, but they retire from curiosity, not business or whatever, but they just retire from curiosity, mainly because they don't have the energy. I'm trying to work out what is the algorithm within me that allow me not only to remain curious, but also have the energy to execute. Go down, right down, deep, deep into the weeds as to how this vertical works.
Well, curiosity is very much just like also the will to keep learning. And like you're the only 68, you're 68, aren't you? You're the only 68-year-old man I know is actively learning jujitsu, boxing, wrestling, all the things, even just that in itself. You know, yes, that's physical, so there's energy, but just the energy it takes to learn something new on top of, you know, multiple businesses, a giant company, media responsibilities, kids, and all that. There's a lot of stuff, and you're still doing that. Like, I guess just the will to learn is almost that curiosity. And you mentioned before, like, you saw traits in me that obviously made you realize, like, okay, well, I want to back this guy because of whatever reason. What advice do you have for what advice do you have for any entrepreneur that's looking to attract a mentor, an investor, or even a business partner? What can they do and show to cause that? Because, you know, where I am today has largely been because of your support. You've always been there for me. You started actually as a mentor, then saw how we progressed, invested and became a partner in my business, and then assisted me in launching my next business. So well, first of all, thank you. If I don't say enough.
But importantly to me, thank you. Because because it's a good question, Daniel. Like,
so how can others find that is what I'm saying. Well, not from you.
It's going to be hard for anybody because it's not an easy thing to do, because it's easy for you and I to map it out. But what I have to tell everybody is that Daniel's father is a great friend of mine, and I sort of promised his father that I would help him out wherever required to be done. But I think importantly, if you didn't have the characteristics that were interesting to me, then, and if I wasn't a curious person, because I'm actually curious as to see whether or not your thesis works. You know, the cub thesis, was it going to work? Is the boa thesis going to work? So I have enough interest in that, but then I go one step further. You said something very important about learning. So curiosity and energy, pretty important, but in the middle of all this is your preparedness to learn. So you can be curious about a topic or a marketplace or how a vertical works, and you can make your inquiries, but you've actually got to learn about the program. So when you first started talking about boa, I remember sitting in the various places we've had these meetings, particularly with investors, and I saw Daniel's curiosity starting to develop into an idea, then became something that was invested in. by others, and then was a rollout. And the, but there was a plan. It was a business plan. So I saw the energy, as I said before. I mean, the energy was quite high, which I then sit back and I say to myself, and this is what a typical investor does, sits back and says to themselves, well, I'm actually interested in the space. I like the fact that this individual has lots of energy and has a good track record, and he has learned about the topic and knows his topic. But importantly, one of the things I did sit back about, and I smiled a few times to myself, is I thought his enthusiasm at some stage will get uppercut from the reality of the world, and I'm curious to see, as an investor, what will he learn from it about himself, but what will he learn from the process, and how will he parlay what he learned back into the investment? And that, and you remember, like I remember you throwing numbers around and saying, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do those numbers. And I thought, that's great. That's what we want investors want to see. But equally, we want you to want to see, and this happened to me with Kerry Packer, but we want to see, investors want to see you come back and say, shit, that didn't work the way I thought it would. But this is what I learned. And this is what I'm going to put in action from what I learned. And then get back onto that energy roll instead of going, oh my God, it didn't work, and blame everybody else. That's just shit. You can't do that. Investors hate that. So they want curiosity. They want you to learn about what it is that you're curious about. They want to see that you have the energy to put it into action. Then they want to a bit like rinse and repeat. Oh my God, something went wrong. I'm curious about that. How do I learn about what went wrong? How do I then take that what went wrong into an idea and make sure I then reinvest you're the entrepreneur, reinvest that back into the business? That's the sort of stuff that attracts investors. And Kerry said it to me. And I've had this conversation with you before, but one of the questions he asked me, he said, have you ever failed in life? And failed in business, I should say. And, I had failed in life, but I hadn't necessarily failed in business. And, my answer to him was no. But over time, he explained to me what he was talking about. He said, I want to see if you've got the fortitude and the resilience to not just to stand up to that failure or that presentation of what might be a failure to you, but can you learn from that and then take that back into the business? And that was 20-odd years ago. That's what I do today as an investor. I look for exactly that thing in people. And it doesn't mean necessarily I'll invest, but that is a non-negotiable for me. And I think all investors want the same thing, mate.
But I think it's like the acknowledgement that shit is going to happen. It's not going to go to plan. Can this person take that failure, the pain from it, or, it might not be a failure, but let's say the adversity, take that lesson from it and turn it into excitement and energy that they can then fuel the business further with because they now have that new lesson or that new excitement. That's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah, it is. Like some people be walking down the road, if there's a big brick wall presented to them, they can't get either side of the road. They've got to do something with this brick wall. Some people just stand there and ponder. Some people try and smash it down. Some people think, oh, hang on, I'll climb over it or I might pull the middle five bricks out and the whole thing's going to collapse. That's what I'm looking for, the conundrum solution. The solution, I think, has to be done with lots of pizzazz and energy but acceptance of the conundrum. The conundrum, it's not failure, it's just conundrums. And we're presented with conundrums in business all the time, big ones, small ones. A lot of times they're not even our fault. I mean, they get caused by other outcomes and, economic times, et cetera. So how do people solve conundrums is really important to me. And I think other investors love to see that. And at the end of the day, investors back the individual. They take the idea, I like the idea, but they back the individual to take that idea into something. And that's critical. You've got to be liked. And that doesn't mean I want, I want you to take me to lunch or I need to get on the drink together or pat me on the back. That's not talking liking. What I'm talking about liking is that they've got to believe in that individual. That type of like. You've got to believe in that individual's characteristics, in his or her personality, and believe that they can do the job. That's really important. And that means lots of communication, like you do, lots of communication, constant updates, rightly or wrongly, good outcomes, bad outcomes, just tell us and we can deal with that.
And speaking of communication, I'm always texting you and you always reply, but I'm also texting you asking for coffee, a quick catch up, and you always have time to do it. But you are also probably the busiest person I know, and I know a lot of busy people. So what is a day in the life of Mark Boris? How do you actually run your day, and then how do you somehow manage to have time for, the little things like things I ask?
Well, they're not little for me, but
What time do you get up?
I get up really early. So I usually wake these days about 3:45, 4 o'clock. I fill around with the radio and try and listen to some stuff or whatever. Then I do a few breathing exercises and a few bits and pieces, like more health-related things for about 15 minutes. I get up I always have quickly have a coffee. My first job is to go to the gym. So and I do this on purpose, mate, because I want to be able to – I regulate my life – so that my life can be regulated. It sounds a bit silly, but everything is with a goal to sleeping well at night, because I take the view that good sleep is the most important vitamin pill you can take. Now, good sleep means lots of different things to lots of different people. It means a number of hours, how well you sleep. But getting up early is part of me getting to bed early and then being able to sleep. And regulation of my day is critical. So up, coffee, gym. Tick, I've done that. I've achieved something straight away.
Phase one.
If I get to go to bed at night and it's 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night and I think about my day, which I like to just quickly go back through my day and I think I haven't achieved anything today. I've had a shit day. Then I won't go to sleep. But if I can just say, okay, I got up and I got up early this morning. That's a tick. That's a win. I bank it. The second thing, I've done it. Been to the gym. I might not have had the world's hardest workout. It doesn't matter. But I did some activity. I moved. Ticket, a win, bank it. Then I go and have breakfast. Then that's when I usually have a bit of community time. So I tend to have breakfast in a place where I own the building, but the people have been there for a million years and they've been making me breakfast for a million years. So I tend to go to that really early to that particular place, have my breakfast there. And I talk to people and all sorts of people. There's judges, gangsters, wealthy people, you know, influential people, all sorts of people go there. It's like no holds barred and you get to talk to everybody and it's interesting. It's a good time just to meet interesting people, have a mag about real estate prices or whatever. Then I'm at the office. So I get to office pretty early. So my office day is, you know.
What time would you get in?
7:30. Yeah. So 7:30, quarter to 8, I'm in the office usually. Sometimes I get there earlier, but usually that time. I like to be the first there.
I don't want to brag, but I beat you. I get in at 7.
That's the latest I get there, 7:30. But this morning, so for example, this morning, I went there this morning at, I was at work 5:30, not to be at work, but to, I went for a rucking pack on the back of my back and I put some weights in it and I went rucking today because I was feeling a bit sore up my body. So I thought I'd walk through Botanical Gardens and et cetera, an hour walk. And I fill it up with weights and I just walk around. So I did that one early and I came back to the office then and had a shower and I got my breakfast and I started my day. So then the day is just like everybody else's. I just fit in meetings, whatever the meetings are. And I'm like, yeah, I have a diary manager in my environment who just runs everything in my diary. So I don't have to think about my diary effectively. And then she'll tell me I've got to go meet Laura today. She said, Laura's waiting for you. Here's the number. You know, I was literally sitting at the front anyway because I found a parking spot. But, so I have someone who regulates my day. And this is, as I said, this is all about, it sounds selfish, about me getting a good sleep. So when I get home, I have a routine. Phone goes off at a certain time. I eat and I don't eat after a certain time. If I'm going to have dinner, I must eat before a certain time of night, 6:30. If I don't eat before 6:30, I don't eat at all. I might have a bit of yoga or something like that. Then I go through this process of I have a drink. And then this drink is a powdered drink and has certain things in it. It's allegedly supposed to help you sleep. It's got magnesium and all that sort of stuff. But it probably doesn't. If you're hyped up, you're not going to sleep. But me drinking it sort of hypnotizes me sort of thing, puts me in a position, oh, Mark, you've had your drink.
You're sticking to your process is what, like you're committed to your process.
100% sticking and committed to the process, and I don't like to change my process, even if I'm not here, if I'm overseas. So I'll take all these things with me. And I've got to a point where I like it's all there'll be if I go for 6 days, there's 6 packs of protein, there's 6 packs of green drinks, there's 6 packs of these drinks that I have at night, and I don't break my routine anywhere for any reason.
What time would you go to sleep then if you're waking up at 3:45?
10.
Okay, so you're not having a huge amount of sleep.
True. But if at lunchtime I can lay down for 20 minutes and I can actually sit down because I meditate every day for 5 minutes in the morning and 5 minutes in the afternoon. And sometimes it'll put me to sleep if I've got 20 minutes either side of it. So I'll take a 20 minute shot, just sitting up or laying down, but sometimes I just lay on the floor.
And how do you cope with pressure and stress? Because I'm sure, I mean, you don't really ever look stressed and you've never said to me I'm stressed, but I'm sure you must feel some stress sometimes with situations you're in. How do you cope with that?
You know what I prefer to call stress? Cortisol. So how do I cope with cortisol? So in other words, how do I cope with my organs in my body producing cortisol into my bloodstream, which is put in there for one reason alone is either fight or flight. That's what cortisol is there for. What it basically does, it effectively shuts down everything else. So it shuts down your ability to make good decisions. It shuts down your ability to have good judgment. It just, all it does is says run or fight. So cortisol is quite an interesting drug in your system. So I actually immediately acknowledge when my senses, I'm looking, someone who's angry or someone's yelling at me or I read something, my eyes see something, sense something that is not pleasant, it sets off alarm bells in my system. Adrenaline and cortisol start running around. I've had a fair bit of experience with adrenaline and adrenaline fatigue. So the way I cope is I just acknowledge it straight up. The scientifically acknowledge the chemistry straight up. And then I try to deal with that. And that's my game. I try to deal with it. So go and breathe. Mark, change your parasympathetic to sympathetic. So just sit down and breathe, mate. Retake control back of your system. So box breathing, simple. I do some box breathing for 5 minutes. I don't even do it for 5 minutes, but it brings me back down, reduces my chemistry, brings me back into a normal environment. I still got the email in front of me that's a shitty email, or I've still got to confront something, or I've just got confronted by something. That's still there. It doesn't matter. I take some control back of my own life.
Yeah, it almost sounds like you're focusing on what you can control. You're focusing on yourself, like your own body. So even if there's chaos outside, you're focusing on just your breathing, which is something you can control. Yeah. And it's kind of separating you from the disaster or whatever's causing, and it's making you focus on yourself and put yourself in the right mind frame to then address the situation.
Okay, so Daniel, you go to Larry's gym. You know what it's like when chaos is around you, if you're sparring in the ring or rolling around on the mats. That's why I love jiu-jitsu and why I still love boxing, because it's chaos coming at you. And over time I've learned how to deal with chaos, only just understanding my craft, that's all. So let my craft take over. When I was boxing, it was just take over, let the craft control. Like if someone's coming to me miles an hour throwing 1,000 punches, don't get caught up in that chaos. Just step back and just keep moving away and poking away at them, and eventually you'll be able to take control. Use the ring craft.
Make it your game, make it your fight.
Yeah, lose it and get involved.
Don't let a situation outside of you affect how you would play the game.
And you asked me before, well, you made the comment before, I'm doing jiu-jitsu and all that. Yeah, but I have a reason for doing it. It's all part of my sleep regime. It allows me, jiu-jitsu, allows me, more so than boxing, because it's a pretty it's hectic, jiu-jitsu, and people get you in bloody choke holds and all sorts of weird things, and you can panic, or you can feel like there's a lot of chaos, and you tend not to think properly. Your cortisol starts to take over, and you start to scramble instead of wrestle, and instead of thinking, oh shit, hang on, you got me in this position, I know how to get out of this. If you let your cortisol take over, you end up scrambling and trying to use power or whatever, and you won't get anywhere. You'll end up getting choked. So I do these things for a reason. Everything I do is purposeful about myself. And ultimately, it allows me to sleep. It puts me in this frame of mind. At the end of the day, I can look back and say, I've achieved this. I won this. I haven't won a medal. I just won the moment for myself. I won over myself. And I can look at what I've done for the day. Then I can sort of relax into sleep strategy, get ready to go sleep.
So basically, your day is all about obtaining enough wins to feel proud of myself for the day and tiring myself out enough to have a good night's sleep.
Correct. And then I have a good night's sleep that allows me to conduct the next day.
I like that. That's fantastic.
It sounds very
simple,
binary.
But effective.
But it works. Yeah. And it works for me. And I'm not saying that I never get stressed. It's not possible to say that. I mean, I do get stressed. Some things can really piss me off. Some things can make me sad. Some things can really upset me. But I look at everything, especially these days, I look at everything quite binary. It's not binary, but I look at it in a binary way.
What does that mean?
It's either one or the other. In other words,
black or white.
Black or white. There's nothing in there that's confusing to me. Mark, why are you stressed? It doesn't matter why I'm stressed. My cortisol is going mad and my adrenaline is going mad. That's what you've got to control. You can't control the thing that created the drama in the first place, because our bodies are wired, like our eyes, our ears, our taste buds, our sense of touch and feel. They're things that talk to our brain, and the brain then sends a message to somewhere to produce certain hormones, and those hormones then take control. That's our animal instinct. That's what how we've
been. We have to override evolution.
Yeah, manage it.
And what's the worst thing that's ever happened to you in business, or the toughest time that you've ever had?
I've had some pretty tough time. Being listed as a public company, I think, was a pretty tough period, because I'm not a, whilst everybody sort of, not everybody, but a lot of people know I am, and I'm in the public eye as a media sort of person. I'm not really public. I don't like people talking about me, or particularly writing about me. And particularly when I think it's written, that when it's written, it's unfair, or if I think it's unfair. So for me, that was a tough, long, tough period when we're listed as on the ASX. Because if your business didn't perform, it became you're not performing. And whereas there are external forces probably creating the reason why you're not performing, you know, the business is not performing, because I'm not the business. I'm a part of the business, but I'm a small part of the business, in that there's thousands of people who work for us. And marketplaces operate a certain way, and governments regulate those marketplaces. So we're not in control of that stuff. So probably the toughest period of my life is the period, a few years of being listed was a really tough part of my life, sort of what I consider people saying things that weren't correct. I don't want to say unfair, just not correct. I respect journalists. They got to write a story. They got to write a story today. They got to write another story tomorrow. So, you know, they've got 750 words, 1,000 words to write. So they're going to write what they write. I get it. But sometimes it manifests itself, and other people say things to you, and, you know, that sort of bothers me if it's incorrect. So I found that really tough going, to be honest with you. That was tough. But in terms of periods in my life, I think probably one of the biggest, toughest periods was the Hayne Royal Commission. So when the Royal Commission happened, which into banking, the Hayne Royal Commission, the commissioner actually made recommendations that mortgage brokers, that was my biggest business, that mortgage brokers could no longer take a commission from the banks, and that they had to charge the client. And that was pretty much the death knell of the mortgage industry. But I had to overcome that, and I was lucky. I was quite good friends with Josh Frydenberg, who was then the Treasurer, and Scott Morrison, who was then the Prime Minister, and I was able actually to help build a lobby group and actually go and convince them that this is not a good thing for Australia for a whole lot of technical reasons. And in the end, that they and also the Labor Party post that actually took the view, agreed with us, and they allowed the mortgage broking industry to stay whole. So one of the recommendations of the Royal Commissioner to the government was actually to get rid of brokers. That was one of the few recommendations that the government did not accept. They accepted all the other recommendations about the Banking Royal Commission. So that was a pretty horrific time, but we recovered from that. So I was happy about that. GFC was a tough period for me too. Whilst I didn't own a mortgage business, I still was a gem and a wizard under the GE ownership. It was sort of emotionally tough in that you know, my good mate, John Simons at Aussie, he was able to buy the Wizard business from General Electric. You know, he was in partnership with CBA at the time. John and James, they bought the business. I just didn't like that whole process, because I felt like I let people down, even though I didn't own it anymore. I'd already sold it, but to GE. But I felt like I'd let people down, that they had to change their brand from Wizard to Aussie, et cetera. Yeah, I felt a bit an emotional failure then. And actually, you know what's just funny? I don't get sick very often, but I got whooping cough during that period. And when they settled, because John asked me to go around Australia with him to talk to all the brokers and help her transition across to Aussie, which I agreed to do. And I got whooping cough on that trip, and I woke up one morning on the floor at my house. I collapsed. I just thought I had the flu, and I just kept coughing. Anyway, in the end, I coughed so much that I tore all my throat up, and my throat was so, whatever it is, inflamed, swelled up to a point where I couldn't breathe. And I got up to go to the bathroom. I think that's what I must have done. And then I collapsed on the ground. Next thing I know, I found myself in St. Vincent's emergency. What's interesting about that is, for me anyway, it's all at the back of being emotionally exhausted from a process that I was sort of disappointed in. Not G's fault, not Aussie's fault. It was GFC. I mean, that people do things during these periods. And, I'll never, ever forget that moment. I'll never forget that week.
But what would the you of today have advised the you of then in how to overcome those mental challenges or stresses or disappointments? How would your perspective have been different now if it happened to you now?
I would say to me, or anybody else for that matter, is business is business. It's not your family. You can't be defined by your business. Your business doesn't define you. I let Wizard define me. And to some extent it's a trap that people can fall into because, especially when you're younger, I think, because media builds you up. You're on the jersey of the New South Wales State of Origin side. Like, you actually start to believe your own bullshit at the end of the day. And you start defining yourself by the thing that you built, and that becomes you. And it's not you. And that would allow me, if I had had that thought process, that Wizard did not define me, irrespective of the fact that I didn't own it any longer, that I wouldn't have felt as emotionally charged by the whole transaction. And then I would have been able to step back and just say, go for it, John. I was happy John took it. I mean, we're mates. I was happy that if anyone was going to get it, I was happy for him to get it. But I still shouldn't have taken it personally or to heart. Oh, my God, it's like losing a kid.
Yeah.
And it's not the same.
No, I think that's fantastic advice. I can actually relate to it a lot too. I mean, I know a lot of business owners can relate to that a lot. You can't be the same thing as your business, because when your business is down, that doesn't mean you're necessarily down.
Correct.
You know, that's like you could be higher because you're learning. You're actually better now from experiencing that stage in the business's life. Would you say that your life at the whole has been dedicated mostly to business in your career?
Yeah, I pretty much within my career, except for the period when I was running the accounting firm, then I was working in the law firm. Those periods it was looking after other people's issues and problems, you know, drafting documents and settling deals. But certainly after 31 years of age, everything I did was about businesses.
And what's the best thing that came from that? So what's the best thing that came from your life's focus being on the business, and what's the worst thing what bad has that caused? I really asked that question poorly. Should I re-ask
it? No.
You get what I'm saying.
No, I think so. Like, I'll deal with the second part first. Probably the biggest downside of all these things is all my businesses have been retail-based, so it means brand-based, which means if you don't, haven't been around 50 years or something, you got to put your one way of differentiating yourself and you got to shine a light on yourself as an individual. You got to front the brand, and that by definition reduces your private life. So if I was to say I had any regrets, it is that, and I don't mean someone walking up the street and say, "Oh, hi Mark, love what you do," whatever. That's all cool. I don't mean that. I mean people trying to pick apart your private life, and all those people involved in your private life having their life, without them choosing to be, put up there in the public environment, which is why I'm really careful with who gets to see who my family is and my friends are. I sort of keep a really strong lead door between that, those, and the media. So that's probably my biggest regret. But on the flip side, I met so many wonderful people. And I've had so many great opportunities, and to vicariously view into people's business lives and see what they do without any liability, without any downside. So I can gather information and learn and just watch it. It's like a Netflix movie for me, you know, but I'm in the movie, but I'm not in the movie. And also building these incredible networks I have. I mean, I know people all over the joint, everywhere, particularly in this country. And
what about the financial aspect? I mean, does it make it worth it?
Yeah, I don't, and this is going to sound really blasé, but I don't think about the financial aspect. I never have. You know, when I started Wizard, I never thought, oh, wow, I'm going to make this much money. It's going to become valued at this price. I didn't think about it. I did a model. That's it. It was just a numbers thing for me because the numbers can change any time. Yes, I am grateful for my financial position. I'm definitely grateful for that. It's better than not being in this position.
Which you have been in.
Yeah, I have been in the not position. I've been in the crappy position. But I was equally happy, to be honest with you. It hasn't made me – money doesn't make me happier. It's more about what I – other things I gained from it. Like once I was asked – when I many years ago I did the Australian Story in the ABC, and they asked me, what's your definition of success and in relation to Wizard? And I said – probably the most important thing for me, one of the best things for me anyway, that I still remember to today, was looking at the people who went through our business as young staff members, young people, to become the best version of themselves. So we had a girl, a lady, her name was Jill Emberson, right at the very beginning of Wizard, and I was looking for a PR person. And Jill was the PR person for Greenpeace. And another guy called Gabriel McDowell, he introduced me to Jill to take over our PR. And Jill came for the meeting and she said, look, I'm Greenpeace, blah, blah, blah. And Greenpeace was sort of fairly left of centre in those days. And I said, what do you know about financial services? She said, nothing. I said, well, I can make you into really a financial service person. Now, Jill, at the end of her tenure with us, when G bought it, she could have walked into any bank and taken over PR for that bank, for taken over media. She was incredible. And I felt as though, and I met her family, I knew her daughter.
Because she did such a good job for you guys.
And she became so good. And I felt as though I contributed to that by teaching her.
So you
her.
Love that feeling.
I taught her to become the best version of herself, or helped her become the best version of herself. She did it, but I was there as a guide, you know, and I might have been a little rough around the edges in the way I dealt with her from time to time, but I know that she sort of loved me for that. Unfortunately, she passed away a little while ago with cancer, but she was and a well-known ABC person she was. And there's a number of stories like that out of Wizard. There's guys who still work for Aussie who set up at Wizard 20-odd years ago, and now their kids are running those branches in places like Irwin and stuff like that. And they got two or three houses and four or five cars, and their kids have been able to buy the kids a house, and the kids have got a job. And, yeah, to me that's probably one of the greatest things I ever did, Daniel, was see people become the best version of themselves.
And so dedicating your life to it and building something, you're enabling other people to rise with you. That's the – that's one of the biggest benefits. That's one of my favorite benefits.
Well, that's what mentor's about. The whole mentor thing is, how can I do this now for thousands of people?
I was just about to ask you, actually, what fuels your passion and love in supporting small business?
I do love small business because it's been a great provider to me and it's been a great source of joy in my life. That's one. So I feel as though I need to pay forward. I've been lucky. I've met all sorts of people. I've had all sorts of joint venture partners, investors, and, you know, et cetera. I've met some of the biggest CEOs from the biggest companies in the world, like General Electric, who wanted to buy my business. Lucky. And I don't mean it's from luck, but I'm lucky that all the elements in my life, characteristics, everything like that, and times allow me to do that. I feel as though I've got to pay forward. So the mentor was born out of that. I need to pay forward. How can I pay forward to as many people as possible? I can't meet 100 people a day, but I can talk to, in one podcast, 100,000 people in 1 hour. So that was what drove me to do the podcast. And I thought, well, that's a way of me putting back into society. And that was 8 years ago I started that up. And it was originally called The Mark Burrell Show, but we decided to take my name out of it. And it was we decided to call it The Mentor when Southern Cross Austereo launched a thing called an Australia called Podcast One, and they invited me to become the first podcast on Podcast One. I can't remember which year it was, but anyway, I did, and they said, look, maybe we don't take away from the Mark Burrell Show and we call it something else, and we decided to call it The Mentor.
Now, a big question that you probably get asked a lot, what do you think business owners should be expecting from the Australian economy this year?
2024. Okay, good question. So me and Kooky, Stephen Koukoulos, we put our podcast out, I think it might have come out yesterday, maybe come out today, I don't know, but on the Australian economy. So we looked at all the data.
What's the podcast called?
It's called, shit, I don't even know. It's up on my mentor podcast.
Okay, but they can find
me, yeah, me and me and Stephen Koukoulos.
Okay.
And we meet every month and we talk about, you know, all the data. And he's a well-known economist, you know, ex-chief economics advisor to Julie Gillard, ex-head of the AFR in terms of interest rates and the economy, economics. And we're great mates. So he flies up from Melbourne, or drives up from Canberra, I should say, and we meet every once a month. And we record a podcast and he goes through all the ABS stats that have come out, all the RBA stats, every stat you can imagine. So the prognosis right now is this. We don't think Australia's going to dip into a recession. But if it does, it'll be a very mild one and it'll just be a technical recession. In other words, two quarters of negative growth. Right now, we're on a quarterly basis, we're running at about 0.2%, which is not great. I mean, it's not too bad though. Everyone keeps talking about the per capita recession. There is a per capita recession, which actually doesn't affect business so much, but it's more that more is a reflection on standard living. So standard livings get affected when we have a per capita recession. So in some consumers out there, their standard of living has dropped because they can't maybe put their kids in after school sport because they've got to save a bit of money to either pay the extra rent or the extra mortgage, and the cost, other costs of living have gone up. So something gets sacrificed. So that changes your standard of living. So there is a change in standard of living. So small businesses, you have to look at where does my product or service fit within my audience, in other words, my customer audience, relative to their standard of living, and will my product and or service be something that they'll tear up and sacrifice? But the question becomes, how long will this last for? Because people bounce back. You know, consumers and audiences bounce back pretty quickly. The moment they got more money, they start to spend it because that's human behavior. So probably the real thing that Stephen and I, Kooky and I, have been concentrating on is when will the country come back? Now, we don't know. No one knows, but we can tell you what the money markets say. The money markets are saying there'll be at least two interest rate cuts by the end of this year. October, November, there's a money market punting, right? The big four banks have all come out on saying that there'll be at least 100 basis points of rate cuts this year and next year. But one bank is saying at least 175 basis points of rate cuts. So that's a 1.75 rate reduction between here and sometime next year in 2025. It doesn't really matter when the dates are. It doesn't really matter how much they are, but whether it's 100 or 175. But if it's got to be at least 100, the data says, it's going to be probably this year. But the moment the market gets wind of this, things will start to improve because the wealth effect will change. And the wealth effect is the most powerful effect in our economy in Australia.
What do you mean by wealth?
How wealthy I feel. In other words, I don't feel wealthy if my cost of living keeps going up. In other words, inflation keeps rising, which is not. It's starting to get under control. So if my cost of living does not continue to go up, then I start to feel okay. I'm not feeling wealthy yet, but I'm starting to feel okay. I'm feeling like I'm getting closer to wealthy. If I own property and my property value is going up, I feel wealthy. I'm just might not be spending it just yet. But it doesn't take much to get me into a mindset where I will spend, which is what the government, you know, this is a terrible thing, manipulates us with. The Reserve Bank's manipulating our behavior by working on the wealth effect. How wealthy do we feel that on any one day? And I look at my bank account, I've got nothing left, or I don't feel wealthy. I look at my bank account because I've reduced the rates by 3 times, or my wages have gone up, but my cost of living hasn't gone up, no inflation. I feel a bit more wealthy, so I will spend some more money. Ultimately, in 2025, we're going to have an election. This government and the new Reserve Bank, there's a new Reserve Bank now, or they haven't appointed them, but there's a new regime, do not want to put us into a recession for any length of time. In fact, they want to say that we've dragged you out of a potential recession. They're going to blame the previous government and they want to get re-elected. But bet your bottom dollar they want to get re-elected. So they'll do the following things. They will make sure that fiscal policy, in other words, budgets, this year's budget and next year's budget before the next election, will be positive in favour of consumers. And that means put more money in people's pockets. Simple. And the Reserve Bank has done the heavy lifting already. They've already bruised us pretty hard. They know that people are suffering. They know what the data says, and they would also be backing in interest rate reductions. How many, I don't know, but interest rate reductions at the later this year, in which point more money will go into our pockets. We know the tax cut's coming 1 July for more people. Like it or not that it's a broken promise, it doesn't really matter. What they have done is put more money in more people's pockets and less money in a small amount of people's pockets. But there's still more money for everybody. So bottom line, more money, wealth effect. Now, if you're someone that relies on people not feeling down to buy your consumable, whether it's a product or service, I think you should be getting ready, starting to build your inventory, start to build your IT system, start to build your customer base out, start to get all your data already, get ready to start marketing, because I think you don't want to make sure you don't miss the boat, which is going to be later this year.
Okay. And we normally finish with like a favorite book or lesson or something like that. But I don't know if we actually organised that for today. So,
but I have a favourite book I'm currently reading.
Well, can we do two then?
Yeah.
A favourite book and also what do you think your most important lesson in business is? But start with your favourite book.
Well, the one I'm reading right now, I just finished actually, it's called 4,000 Weeks. Basically, it's put into a proper algorithm. Like the average age of a person, it was actually written for people in the UK, but it applies equally here to Australia. The average age of a male and a female in Australia is 81 and 82 years of age. That's how we live our lives, which sort of works out about 4,000 weeks. Basically what it's saying to you is don't be too intense about what you do, because I've calculated, my board has calculated, I've got 673 weeks left or something out of my 4,000, okay? So that's pretty important. So don't go stuffing yourself up on your last 600 odd weeks. And there's not a lot, okay, when you think about it, there's not a lot of weeks. And then it made me think about, well, how can I extend that? How can I improve my 676? So if I can get from 80 to 100, that's another 50 by 20, that's like 2,000 weeks. Can I go from 676 weeks to 2,676 weeks? That's a big difference. How do I do that? And that's where my curiosity has kicked in, and I'm now sort of ideation process of how do I do that? How do I do that myself? And then I think to myself, well, hang on, how can I share that with everybody else? You know, how can that become a thing for me? And everybody else who's thinking, once I tell them, do the calculation, and they go, my God, I ain't got long to go. And I say, well, maybe you should start thinking about what I'm doing. And perhaps there's a business in that, Dan.
Yeah.
We don't talk about it.
It sounds like it. And what about your greatest lesson?
I'd say my greatest lesson is this. Is Kerry once said to me, when the money's on the table, take it off the table. Don't sit there and bet it up on the next hand. And him being a great gambler as he was, I mean, he would gamble until the money was there, and then he would just take it away and walk away, which is why a lot of casinos didn't like him. Because he would take his winnings. And when we talk about winnings, him, it wasn't $500,000 or $1 million back in those days. We're talking
or $200.
we're talking about tens of millions, okay? And he would take it off the table. And he said to me in business one time that we had a deal put to us for somebody to come in and buy one third of our business. And it was $60 million just to come in as a partner of ours back in 2002, I think it was, 2002. He said, son, take the money off the table. And so, in other words, don't go back and start negotiating more money. You know, it is what it is. It's a good price. Be happy with what you're being offered. Because sometimes there's an old Greek story about a dog, Skilo, walking across the bridge over the water. No rails on the bridge. On the bottom of the water is like glass, no wind. And he could see his own reflection. And he's got a bone in his mouth because he found a bone before he got on the bridge. And he's very happy walking up the bridge. He looks over the bridge, stops halfway, looks over the bridge, and he sees a reflection of a dog in the water with a bone in its mouth. And he thinks, shit, I got this bone, but I wouldn't mind getting that one too. So he's a bit of a bully. He goes down to get this bone. All set, he drops his bone because obviously it was his own reflection, and he ends up with no bone. So take the money off the table. Be happy with what you got. Don't try too hard.
Thank you so much for coming. Oh, God, what happened to my voice there? Thank you so much for coming in today, Mark.
No worries, mate.
This is probably the most serious conversation I think we've ever had.
Yeah, it was fun, eh?
It was very good. And to our listeners, if you want the link to Mark's book recommendation, you go to cub.club/podcast. You can find it there. If you want to catch up with Cub on socials, it's at Club United Business on Instagram. It's awesome there as well. And Mark, is there anything that you want to say before we wrap up? Any
Subscribe to Boa.
Yes. If you're a business owner, get on Boa. Thanks, Buck. Hope you enjoyed the show.
See you guys.